Banks Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
Okay, welcome back. You're listening to the second hour of the weekend edition of the Cortland Economics Report. We're chatting in the first couple of segments of this particular hour. Jeff is back in the studio with me, and we are talking about Obamacare. Jeff knows quite a bit about this, both the negative and if there are any positive aspects of it. I'm sure Jeff would know about that also. James Farley is also with us. James is an old friend of mine. He is a seasoned veteran in the healthcare industry. He's currently the chief operating officer of a major healthcare chain. He is kind of our go-to person when it comes to this subject because he deals with it every single day. The thing that really got me interested in this, and I'm going to turn it over to Jeff here in 2 seconds, the thing that really got me interested in this was the recent editorial that appeared in the New York Times where the op-ed writer was saying this thing is just turning into an absolute disaster and there really isn't very much good about it. That's an interesting statement to be made on the pages of a paper like the New York Times. Jeffrey, it's all yours, my friend.
Well, Al, it's interesting. You know, it's been a couple of years now since Nancy Pelosi made her famous gaffe when she's basically said, now that Obamacare has passed, we'll have to read the bill to know what's in it. And, of course, Obamacare passed way back in 2010, but a lot of its provisions did not go into effect until January of 2013. So we are now, just now, finding out at both the individual level and at the insurance company level and at the state level in terms of state governors what this whole thing might mean and some of the costs involved and some of the headaches and complexities. So, James, I guess as someone who's been in the healthcare industry for a while, a good while, I'm just interested in sort of your high-level thoughts at the panic and confusion that seems to be in the news now that January 2013 has arrived.
You know, as somebody on the delivery side of the industry and on the insurance side of the industry, I'd say what's hitting us is so complex that many systems and health plans are electing to sit on the sidelines because it really isn't clear from the administration and the details how it's going to impact us. You know, to give you an example, you may hear them referred to as the metallics, which are the four offerings that health plans that are going to participate, they have to submit bids that were actually due at the end of April to participate either at the bronze, silver, gold, or platinum level, and they're sealed bids. So once those bids go through, they set the baseline for what prices and services are going to be at each one of those product offerings. It's so confusing, and it's not clear about what the rates are going to be, how it will be administered, how patients or people will access them. A lot of systems are electing just to sit by and wait another year and see how it plays out.
Does all this uncertainty in and of itself, apart from the actual nuts and bolts of the Affordable Care Act, does the uncertainty itself play into some of the, at least anecdotally, what we've been hearing about rate increases on premiums for health care policies?
You know, I don't know if I can speak to the rates because what will happen is plans are submitting blind bids and to each of the state exchanges. And the lowest bidder is, whatever the lowest bid is, sets the established rate for all entries into that particular metallic level. And so it could drive rates down or it could drive them up depending on who elects to submit and participate in each one of those plan designs.
I'm clearly the outsider in this conversation because all I know is what I've read in a number of interviews that I have done in the past on this, but it strikes me that this is a situation where the administration sold it as being very clear-cut, being a win for everybody because now everybody, whether they could afford it or not, would have universal health care. And it turns out it is, I mean, Mrs. Pelosi was 100% right. Nobody knew what they were buying, and the devil is really in the details. I really wonder if we haven't gotten into something that is way, way over our heads.
Well, I think the other thing, Al, is not all of the rules have been written, so they're still writing the rules as they're going into effect. So even these metallics, as they go into effect and people for exchanges can start electing beginning in July to purchase them, it isn't clear how they'll actually be administered.
How can the administration, I mean, geez, Jeff, you're a veteran of the Hill. How can the executive branch do something like this when we're not even, it's not even a clear cut process yet? I don't understand that.
Well, first and foremost, I mean, the legislative branch has to bear some responsibility, A, for passing this turkey, but B, as with so many other bills, we see this in the tax sector, we see this in a lot of areas, you know, basically just painting very broad brushstrokes and then authorizing the whatever administrative agency to promulgate regulations to put the actual statute into effect. And as you mentioned, the devil can be in the details. For instance, I'm just curious whether James might comment on the state-level exchanges that are contemplated by Obamacare, which include, at least in some instances, potentially state funding rather than federal funding for some degree of the state-level exchange. And when, once you introduce that, you know, you're getting into a political question where states have to appropriate the funds themselves. It's one of the more daunting aspects of implementing Obamacare. So, James, any thoughts on the so-called exchanges that are going to be set up? They're going to save us all money from what we've been told?
Well, the thing that a lot of people, when they refer to the exchanges, may not realize is there are actually two. There's a commercial exchange, which is a public exchange that, in the Obamacare model, people can either, if they are not provided health care, then they have to go and purchase health care through the exchange, or they have to pay a penalty. But there's another exchange, which is the exchange for Medicaid. And these are the expanded Medicaid, which is, I think, what you're referring to, Jeff, which is either state Medicaid or expanded Medicaid, which is on the sliding scale between Medicaid and up to Medicare rates for the for people who are, I think it's up to 900% of federal poverty level. So there's really two, and then, again, this is another level of complexity that really isn't clear to the public.
How in God's name did this thing ever get to this point? I mean, not only is the country broke, but now we have a major, major expense for a program that nobody even understands how to implement it. How could something like that happen, you guys?
Well, I mean, Al, it happened in a couple of ways. First, it was really just a temporary step towards a single-payer system, which is what most folks on the left and even some folks in the center want for this country. And I understand that sentiment. But the problem is that I would like both of your opinions on this. It seems we've gotten the worst of all worlds. In other words, we don't have market medicine. We don't have capitalism and pricing and all the market discipline that a true cash system would have. But yet we don't just have universal coverage in the sense that, like, the NHS in England provides. It may be bad, it may be slow, it may have rationing, and it may take you a long time to see the doctor have an operation. But at least in the UK, you know, if you get hit by a car or you have cancer or something like that, you're covered. Here in America, we seem to have corporatism where we don't have socialized medicine per se, but we don't have market medicine either. We've got the government mandating a bunch of things for what's ostensibly called a private sector. So to me, Al, and to me, James, that's corporatism.
You know, I can't disagree with that. We've got to take a break here in about 20, 25 seconds to let the stations, have their advertisers come in here briefly. But I have to say, I think this is a wonderful example of a very idealistic person who was, number one, really trying to get more votes, number one. And it sounds simplistic, you know, and you guys might be chuckling, I don't know. But it sounds to me like somebody who was, A, trying to buy votes, and, B, put together a plan that was very appealing to a little over 50% of the country, but that didn't really have, that there was really no motive behind this, really, other than perhaps for the executive branch, to really ingratiate themselves into a certain segment of the population. Not a nice thing to say, but I got to tell you, I think it's true. Stick around, you guys. We're going to be right back.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Amino acids are the building blocks of proteins. Amino acids have to be delivered to your body in the shape that nature gave them if they are to be used to create new proteins in your body. Just like a bricklayer cannot use bent or twisted bricks to build a brick wall, so too your body cannot use bent or twisted amino acids to build new proteins. Giving your body an undamaged amino acid food can make a huge difference in your health. One World Way is an undamaged amino acid food unlike any other. You see, heating bends and twists amino acids, and all whey protein powders we've investigated, and most proteins you consume, are heated. With our TruCool process, you now have a choice with One World Way.
My name is Daniel. I'm 34 years old. When I started using One World Whey, I weighed 228 pounds. Now, after 2.5 months, I weigh 182 pounds. This is my ideal weight. I've noticed an increase in stamina, rate of recovery from workouts, and an increase in my potency.
Call 888-988-3325 or visit oneworldway.com.
Gold isn't for you? Ted Anderson, president of Midas Resources, one of the world's premier gold and precious metal investing firms.
I get it.
You wouldn't buy gold if you believed that the government is doing a great job, that the Fed will stop handing out trillions of dollars like bailout candy, that Social Security would be there for you. That's not what's happening. You might even pass on gold if the stimulus package wouldn't fuel inflation, or that the dollar wouldn't lose value, or that your retirement would be secure. If all looks rosy to you, then now is not the time to buy gold. For the realists, there have never been more sobering reasons to diversify with gold. Since 2001, the U.S. dollar index has tanked 30%, while gold has risen 300%. Right now, savvy investors are adding gold to their portfolios. You should, too. Find out what they know. Call us, and I'll send you 10 reasons why gold will do very well, free. 800-686-2237. 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
So, a natural disaster strikes, and out goes your power. You risk losing stored food in electric freezers and refrigerators. Your options: lose all that expensive food and medication, fire up a noisy gasoline-powered generator, or switch now to a propane or natural gas-powered refrigerator from Ben's Discount Supply. Ben'sDiscountSupply.com has a complete line of propane-powered refrigerators, freezers in sizes ranging from a small camper cooler size up to a whopping 21-cubic-foot refrigerator freezer or a 22-cubic-foot deep freezer, in stock and ready to ship anywhere. Ben'sDiscountSupply.com also stocks a full line of solar-powered appliances to get you completely off the grid. Check out Ben'sDiscountSupply.com or call 800-771-7702. That's 800-771-7702. Or click Ben'sDiscountSupply.com for camping, home, or bug-out location. Bank on Ben'sDiscountSupply.com.
What's safer and cheaper than prescription drugs?
Glad you asked. The answer is Renovation Teas. Herbal remedies are much safer and much cheaper than prescription drugs. Taste great, and most importantly, herbal teas are effective and non-addictive. Renovation Tea is especially unique, and here's why. We spent years researching herbs and their beneficial properties. Renovation Teas uses only 100% organic, fair trade herbs. Our teas are blended towards specific ailments and health conditions, such as diabetes, blood pressure, anxiety, libido, detox, and much more. All Renovation Teas are formulated and hand-filled in Arkansas. Take care of yourself naturally, the way Mother Nature intended. Order Renovation Teas at renovationtea.com or call 870-784-3121. That's 870-784-3121. Renovation Teas. Renovate your health one bag at a time.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the weekend edition of the Corlin Economics Report. Jeff Dice, as always, talking to Big Al, and our special guest this morning, James Farley. We are talking healthcare, we are talking Obamacare, and what the hell it all means. You know, James, one of the things that Dr. Paul, always talked about was market medicine, and we always envisioned that, you know, a free market medicine might look something like cash for basic services and relatively affordable, high deductible insurance policies for catastrophic events and catastrophic illnesses. I'd like to get your take on, you know, what market medicine looked like if government wasn't involved and if we didn't have government sort of mandating third-party payment and HMOs. What do you think that an ideal system might look like?
You know, I think what's happening already across the country is aggregation of systems. So looking at either large multi-regional, large regional systems or systems that are across the state, primarily in large metropolitan areas, that's beginning to happen already. And I think that is part of the market driving that, to be more efficient, to drive down the cost of doing business, take the back office functions, the billing and supply chain functions, and leverage aggregating those functions to get better costs to drive the waste out of the system. The market's driving that by itself. I think that's probably one of the biggest things that's happening. The other one is really consumerism. The more that consumers are attentive to cost and price, healthcare, we're responding by being much more transparent about the overall cost and helping consumers guide their choices, not just on quality and service, but what's it going to cost for a particular clinical event.
Do you have any thoughts or objections about the idea of concierge care? I mean, we see this in countries with so-called socialized medicine, which is the rich take themselves out of that socialized system and still have private doctors, even if that requires them to travel in the form of medical tourism. But we're starting to see this in places like Manhattan and Beverly Hills, where people pay sort of a flat fee to a doctor who doesn't accept third-party payments. And in exchange for that fee, they're part of a small group of patients, and they can generally get a same-day appointment with the doctor. And some people object to this because, obviously, it's mostly for wealthier folks. But isn't that sort of the market speaking as well?
Yeah, that's a great example. I think I'm with a large, very large, multi-hospital, multi-thousands of physician organization, and even though we're not for profit, I would say we don't discriminate against the rich any more than we do the poor. And if providing care for the wealthy is through a mechanism that gives them more readily accessible access to care in a way that they want or they need it, then we're here to provide it for them just as we are for the people who are uninsured who show up to at our emergency departments.
You know, I have a question on this issue, kind of a general question, but the way that this medical system has been sold is that only the rich can afford decent care, okay? You know, if you're not a bazillionaire, you're just kind of left out in the street to die. You know, that's, bluntly speaking, that's the way it's intimated that is what the current system is. I have to say that from my limited knowledge about this thing, about the medical industry, but my intimate knowledge of the political system, I don't think that's the case at all, personally. I mean, am I crazy?
Well, you know, arguably, everyone has access to care today. The Hill-Burton Act back in the 60s, which hospitals took money to in order to expand, obligated them to take care of anyone who came to an emergency department, regardless of their ability to pay. And so the healthcare system really is seeing all and anybody who wants care. It's just not at a very cost-effective way.
Cost-effective not necessarily for the patients, correct me if I'm wrong, but cost-effective in general. Am I correct in that?
You are.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, Jeff. It just sounds kind of crazy to me, bud.
Well, it does, and obviously I'm a huge believer in cash for basic services. I think if there's no third party standing between a patient and his or her doctor, A, I think that lends itself to the true Hippocratic Oath and true doctor-patient privacy and confidentiality, and B, I think it installs discipline in the sense that people only go to the doctor when they need to. They don't go rushing off for every hangnail. And you've heard the analogy that, you know, your car insurance doesn't pay for oil changes, right? It just pays for a wreck. I think we ought to apply that same system. But I'm curious, James, do you feel that there is a sense of real panic and real disarray in your industry, amongst the people you work with over what's happening with Obamacare? I mean, is this really sort of a watershed in American history?
You know, I think it's too early to tell. As I said when we started, I think it's systems, many systems are wading in. They may participate a very small amount, or they may just say, I'm going to sit on the sidelines. I'm actually at a meeting right now, which is of the largest healthcare systems in the country, and we're talking about that this very topic, and about who's electing to participate and who's sitting on the sidelines. And I'd say it's probably about 50-50 right now.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but aren't medical organizations mandated by law to be part of the system?
No, they're not. It's very optional.
But
well, I guess to some extent, if you want to consider the penalty involved in Obamacare mandate, the individual, the consumer, is in a sense legally required to maintain some sort of health care, much like a driver is required to maintain some sort of auto insurance.
And that was the point I was trying to make. I wasn't saying necessarily that every doctor had to be part of the deal. But that if a medical organization, and that to me means, you know, a doctor or a group of doctors, basically wanted to see patients, from a practical standpoint, they got to be part of the deal. Maybe not legally, but from a practical standpoint, they did. Is that off base too?
Well, from a practical standpoint, for a given doctor, if it's just a doctor's office or they're part of a larger delivery system, it's about volume, and they need the volume in order to make their margins, because, you know, it's higher volumes for a regular doctor office visit because the reimbursement is so low. And if they elect not to participate, then they're foregoing those volumes and they're going to have to make it up on more lucrative engagements with different health plans.
Yeah. You know, I want to address one other issue, and we're going to have to go just a little bit longer in order to do this. But the issue that I want to address is I think that the way that this thing is continuing to be sold is I believe it's continuing to be sold and being used as a political football in the following way. Headlines about 3 weeks ago were, cancer patients receiving certain drugs would not be able to get the drugs anymore because the Republicans would not go along with the new budget. Stick around. We're going to address this one in just a minute.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Positive results from satisfied customers of Heart and Body Extract continue to pour into our website, hbextract.com.
This is Al from New Jersey. One day I saw your ad for Heart and Body Extract, and it mentioned that it would help me with angina, so I decided to order. I figure I had nothing to lose.
Heart and Body Extract supplies your body with everything it needs to balance itself and maintain optimal heart and circulatory health with no negative side effects.
I took the formula 3 times a day as directed, and I kid you not, within 4 days, my angina pain was completely gone.
Order HB Extract by calling 866-295-5305 or online at hbextract.com. That's 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
I could not believe it actually stopped the pain. Heart and Body Extract actually works. This is just an amazing product. Even the numbness in my hands is completely gone.
Heart and Body Extract, for a long and healthy life.
Time and time again.
You need to come here and help us. We need assistance. Please.
Those we should be able to depend on let us down.
Federal and state and local officials saying help is on the way. Well, the folks here in Bell Harbor say show me.
Don't depend on the government to save you. Take action now so that you're prepared for the next disaster with MyPatriotSupply.com. Get the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Call 866-229-0927.
We are hurting down here, and we need help immediately.
Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Bills in front of Congress right now could take away your right to keep and bear arms. If Obama has his way, all guns will be either banned, restricted, or confiscated, possibly by executive order. The best way to keep your guns is to hide them. What Obama can't find, Obama can't take away. You can protect your guns from any threat. Download our special report, How to Hide Your Guns, at GoHideYourGuns.com. Learn how to hide your guns while keeping them readily available. Get the report now before they make us take it down. On the web at GoHideYourGuns.com. Sergeant Dave Scott, Army Search and Rescue veteran, wants you to hear this urgent message. All emergencies have casualties, but in America, most casualties from storms like Katrina and Sandy only happen because good people were in the wrong place at the wrong time. Don't let that happen to you. Visit yourbugoutplan.com on the web. Watch a free video presentation of the skills you need to be long gone before any disaster can touch you. You owe it to yourself and to your family to watch this. Head to yourbugoutplan.com on the web right now, yourbugoutplan.com.
Will I have garlic breath after I take Ali-C?
We get that question all the time about the world's best garlic extract, Ali-C. And the answer is, Ali-C contains stabilized allicin, nature's antimicrobial agent, and the active ingredient in crushed garlic, but will not give you garlic breath. Scientifically proven in double-blind studies, using low doses of allicin greatly reduces the number, severity, and duration of common colds. Our powerful Ali-C contains 300 milligrams of stabilized allicin. Just one tablet of Ali-C is equivalent to 40 garlic cloves. It's effective against asthma, MRSA, bacterial, fungal, and viral infections, and helps lower high blood pressure and high cholesterol. Plus, it's a natural mosquito repellent. Boost resistance to infection with nature's best garlic extract, Ali-C. For more information and to order Ali-C, call 877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com. That's 877-888-7126 or garlichealthproducts.com. Fight back with Ali-C.
Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Okay, well, the question that I had, Jeff, for James and also for you, you know, as you accurately at the break stated, this is a sequestration issue, but the government is in effect blaming, in my opinion, the healthcare industry for not providing certain cancer treating drugs, because they're saying that the government is saying, well, we can't do that because our budget wasn't, the Democrats are saying we can't do that because our budget wasn't approved. There's no money for it. So consequently, these poor people with cancer, according to the headlines, no longer can get these drugs. What's that all about?
Oh, medical care and pharmaceuticals are like any other good or service. They're not unlimited in nature. There is such thing as scarcity. And when we get into insurance and pooling and actuarial risk, whether that's mandated by government or whether it's at least a quasi-market result arising from HMOs or managed care, you know, there are going to be decisions made about costs. I don't understand why the public seemingly can't grasp this concept. I mean, there is not unlimited health care available for everybody. We can't give everybody an MRI every month. There's just not enough money no matter how you slice or dice it. And I don't think that, you know, the moral argument necessarily stands. We're economic actors, and certainly we want to be moral and we want to help other people. And to a certain extent, I suppose we all agree to use our tax dollars to do so. But, you know, the idea that there might be limits or decision making or scarcity applied to expensive treatments or expensive drugs seems so obvious on its face that, you know, I have to really strongly disagree with those who act like this is something to be outraged over.
Before the breakout, we were talking about price transparency and costs. And I think one of the things that will happen as healthcare systems begin to share more information about what the cost is and what the price is for the public, the public will start shopping more and they'll begin rationalizing those decisions directly because it's a personal decision about what they want to spend their money on, how they want to select care.
Something about taking responsibility for your own actions? Is that what we're talking about here?
Yes.
James, I know you're in a hurry. We appreciate your time. To me, you guys, this has been very illuminating. I'm going to talk about some more political issues here very, very shortly. James, thanks so much for your time, bud. Okay, as James is walking out, Marshall Beryl is walking in. We're going to change the subject a little bit here. We're not going to talk about political issues, although, boy, I know you know where I'm coming from on this particular, on the situation with this medical care, and I know you know where Jeff is coming from, but, you know, we're in a market situation right now. This is theoretically a financial show, and so we need to get back to the market situation right now. Jeff and I are chatting with Marshall Beryl. Marshall is the co-founder, co-portfolio manager of the Encompass Fund, and we're going to chit-chat with him for a little bit right now. Jeff, I know you've got some questions. You got the mic, bud.
Well, anyway, thanks very much for being with us. You know, I'm curious. As I became interested in commodities over the last 10 years or so, I read Jimmy Rogers' seminal book, Hot Commodities, which I believe came out in about 02 or 03, if I remember correctly. And I've always wondered why there are so few funds that invest in commodities and resource sector assets. Obviously, Jimmy Rogers owns or provides some of those funds, but do you think that there's sort of an inherent volatility in commodities and the resource sector that makes that kind of fund unattractive maybe for the average Joe?
Well, it could be the volatility. I think more particularly it's viewed as a niche area or specialty area. And many advisors are disinclined towards investing in a fund or funds that are specialty oriented. There are about, I think, roughly 75 gold funds that invest in gold stocks and maybe to some degree the gold bullion itself, but primarily the stocks. And there's another group of natural resource funds, I'm talking about mutual funds, over the years, and that are out there. And so there are some, but it as you say, there's not a lot of them. And then more recently, there's been a group of exchange-traded funds, the ETFs, that have been started to invest in some of them in the commodities themselves, primarily using futures, and some of them in the stocks of companies. There are differences depending whether you're investing in the commodity itself. You own gold or silver bullion or platinum, palladium, or if you're investing in the futures for the various commodities where they have futures markets, or you invest in the stocks of the companies that are exploring for and producing the commodities. With the Encompass Fund, which is a no-load mutual fund, we invest in the stocks of the companies that are involved in various commodities, as well as other areas. Encompass funds, they go anywhere, fund any sector, any industry. Having said that, and as you mentioned, over the last 10, 12 years, many of the commodities have done very well price-wise, and the stocks, although they are volatile, because there's increasing demand for the various commodities as there's growth around the world. And it fluctuates some, but there is growth around the world, and you need copper, and you need oil and natural gas and uranium to run nuclear energy plants, and coal and silver, which is about 50% an investment metal and about 50% used in industrial purposes. Gold is primarily an investment metal and storehouse of value for the last 6,000 years.
Well, I would also argue that when it comes to looking at a fund as opposed to buying direct investments, when it comes to a fund and you're interested in precious metals or the resource sector or commodities, that there's a strong argument for a managed fund. I mean, this isn't like a guy sitting home on E-Trade buy in another share of Google or something like that. And it's no place I would venture for an index fund necessarily. I mean, do you agree that this is an area where people have to sort of roll up their sleeves and do maybe a little bit more work than is involved in a traditional fund that invests in, let's say, a certain sector of the NYSE?
I think that's the case. And also, as you mentioned, if they don't want to roll up their sleeves, then they can invest in a mutual fund that invests in a number of them, or in an exchange-traded fund. Another advantage is that you get some diversification. If you're invested in a fund, depending on the fund and how it's managed, you may have 30 or 40, 50, 60 different companies. So if one company has a problem, whether it's geopolitical, which we see increasingly around the world, or it's the nature of the extraction, i.e. BP in the Gulf of Mexico a couple of years ago, or whatever, if there's a problem with a particular company and you're invested in that company, you're going to feel it directly. If that company has been chosen by a fund manager to be part of a portfolio, it's going to be far less disastrous on a direct basis.
Marshall, I need to take a real quick break right now. I want to keep you in the studio, if you don't mind, for the final segment. A couple of reasons. Number one, you guys have done very, very well over the years in terms of the Encompass Fund. Yeah, there have been ups and downs, but you guys have done very, very well. I have to say also, in the interest of full disclosure, that Kathy and I have been invested in the Encompass Fund now for quite some time, probably been about 2.5 years. So please don't construe this as being either advice. Number one, don't construe it as being investment advice. And number two, this is really not a solicitation to buy or sell. Marshall is just a very knowledgeable guy who we like to chat with. Stick around. I'm going to be right back with Jeff Dyson.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Gardeners, here comes another growing season, but don't use last year's soil. Maximize yields in your survival garden with EM1 from Terraganics. EM1 is an organic soil conditioner, fertilizer amendment, and compost accelerant that provides a broad spectrum of beneficial microorganisms, enzymes, trace minerals, vitamins, and various organic acids. EM1 helps regulate the soil's pH level and its soil microbes, improving moisture retention and drought tolerance. Remember last year's dry conditions? EM1 from Terraganics is safe, chemical-free, and certified for use on all organic farms. It improves plant quality, size, color, flavor, and gives up to 20% more nutrient value in fruits and vegetables, and greatly increases shelf life. And EM1 is so simple to use, just mix with water and apply. This year, prepare your crisis garden for maximum yields with EM1 from Terraganics.com. Order now at TerraGanics.com or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Terraganics, life's getting better.
If you love pineapple as much as I do, I've got some great news for you. You're going to love this offer from Freeze Dry Guy. For the month of May, Freeze Dry Guy is offering the finest quality freeze-dried pineapple. A case of 6 number 10 cans yielding 114 servings at a special introductory price. First quality freeze-dried pineapple grown and packed with nothing added. This healthy treat works wonders with salad. It's great for snacking, hiking, hunting, camping, and for adding to your food storage program. And please note that Freeze Dry Guy's foods will store on your shelf for decades. Order now and get free shipping to your front door within the lower 48 states. This special introductory price is good until May 31st. For more information and a free complete product list, go to freezedryguy.com or phone 866-404-3663. freezedryguy.com, 866-404-3663.
Man, I love that buttstock pouch on your Mosin Nagant. Where'd you get it?
Strike Hard Gear. They have lots of hard-to-find gear for us comblock shooters, like chest rigs and pouches for your SKS Duckbill magazines.
Set your sights on StrikeHardGear.com. Tough tactical gear for your Soviet-style weapon that's made in the USA. Plus, a no-questions-asked 30-day money-back guarantee and lifetime replacement warranty. Enter GCN for a 5% discount on all products at StrikeHardGear.com.
We the People grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
For centuries, silver has been used as a powerful natural antibiotic, and as a listener to this station, you probably already know the benefits of using colloidal silver. With so many websites to choose from, finding a reputable, patriotic company with great products at affordable prices can be a difficult task. Introducing UtopiaSilver.com. UtopiaSilver.com carries the best, most effective, and most affordable colloidal silver and colloidal gold products in the industry. UtopiaSilver.com also carries products to fit your lifestyle, including weight loss, immune system defense, cleanses, herbs, joint and bone care, and much more. First-time customers using promo code GCN50 will receive 50% off all colloidal products. Visit us today at Utopia Silver. That's UTOPIA Silver. UtopiaSilver.com or call 888-213-4338. That's 888-213-4338. UtopiaSilver.com. Taking back America's healthcare one American at a time.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. This is the last segment. We're wrapping up the weekend edition of the Corlin Economics Report. Jeff Deist here, as always, talking with Big Al. We're very pleased to have Marshall Barrel of the Encompass Fund in studio with us today. You know, Marshall, one question I always like to ask is, do fund managers generally consider monetary policy and what the Fed, what the ECB, what the Asian central banks are doing when they make their decisions? And if not, do you think they should? In other words, isn't that half the equation? What, you know, whether a fund or a stock goes up in, let's say, dollar terms is somewhat meaningless if the dollar itself is going down at the same time.
Well, it's several parts to your question or questions. When you say it's somewhat meaningless compared to other economies, if, for example, you're in the United States and you're purchasing items with using U.S. dollars and you're paid in U.S. dollars and your investments are relative to U.S. dollars, while there is some effect on those investments by what's going on around the world, it's really not going to directly affect the person in the United States whose life revolves around using U.S. dollars. If you're traveling, it's a different thing, and if you're in business and you have overseas activities, it's certainly different. But if you're just involved in day-to-day activities in the United States. As to the more basic question about looking at monetary policies and the U.S. Fed and the ECB, and now very much in the news is the Bank of Japan and the various countries within Euroland, it is important, but you can get too wrapped up in it. A lot of it, in our view, depends on what your objectives are for your investments. And with regards to Encompass Fund, the mutual fund I co-manage with Malcolm Gissen, we're interested in long-term capital gains. So we pay attention to the hourly and daily and weekly comings and goings of the monetary regulators and the politicians. But too often, in our view, investors, and whether they're professional or individual investors, are jumping too quickly at any and every headline, and they're buying and they're selling, and communications of today and electronics of today make it extremely simple. You hit a key button on your computer and or your smartphone and, you know, you buy, you sell. And too often people are doing that. And when you look at the headlines coming out that the Fed's minutes come out, and people think, people read them as saying, well, the Fed's going to start easing or not start easing with with QE, quantitative easing. And then they make a quick decision, and they buy or they sell. It may work for some people, but in our experience, it works for very, very few people. You need to take a step back, catch your breath, and then analyze those activities of the regulators and the politicians in the light of a larger view, a somewhat more macro view. So, yes, it's important, but in our view, the best way to invest for the longer term is not to be jumping at each of those headlines or news events.
Yeah. You know, I have to tell you, one of the reasons, when I started doing the show, Jeff, even before I knew you back in the 90s, you know, we started out just doing conventional business, and that got really boring, and it got really stupid because of where the investment community, in my opinion, was going, and it turned out I was lucky I was right, you know. But we got involved in hard assets in, I think it was 2002, pretty much just totally specializing in hard assets. But very quickly I realized the very, very important tie-in between political issues and investing, particularly in hard assets. And I have to tell you, now I am firmly convinced that both subjects need to be dealt with almost equally on a show of this type because they are so interrelated.
Well, there's no question about it. It's called political economy for a reason, right?
Right.
Whether we like it or not, politics affects the economy, and obviously, clearly, the Fed does. You know, Marshall, getting back a little bit to, you know, your earlier point of diversification that you get with funds, could you talk a little bit about diversifying within the commodities or the resource or the precious metals areas? I know that you are particularly bullish on some precious metals other than gold that have industrial uses, like uranium. Is that a way for a gold bug like me to hedge against the risk of a particular precious metal falling?
Well, it may be, but more so, but I think more so it goes to what we were talking about before, and that's what's going on in the world. When you look at what's going on in the world and the policies of the monetary policies and the politicians, and you look at something like uranium, there is a great demand, a continuing demand for nuclear power to generate electricity, not only in the United States, but around the world. There's been headlines and actions taken both in Japan after the Fukushima tsunami and earthquake and tsunami, and Germany periodically announces they're going to be reducing or eliminating nuclear power and some other countries. But the fact of the matter is nuclear power is very much alive and well for a variety of reasons. Primarily the agreement with the Soviet Union to deactivate Soviet nuclear weapons and take that uranium and generate it and process it for utility use. And that agreement is coming to an end the end of this year. And a lot of the shortfall in production versus use of uranium on an annual basis has been met by that agreement with what was the Soviets and now the Russians, and Putin has indicated he's not going to renew that agreement. And there's going to be a great shortfall of supply on uranium, and we think that over time that's going to raise the price of uranium, and the companies that are exploring foreign, particularly producing uranium, are going to do very well. Now, that may or may not be correlated with gold, but it is a different commodity that's out there. Another commodity that's watched a lot because it is some indication of economic activity is copper. Copper's use has a great variety of uses and is generally looked at as to what's the economic situation going to be, and various others. Minerals these days are increasingly coming into use that most people haven't heard of. They're rare earths, graphite. These are being used in a lot of alternative energy and green, clean tech uses, and electronics. So those commodities need to be found and mined and produced, and it gets more and more difficult, expensive, time-consuming to find it, and we think the companies that are involved in those activities will do well over time.
Jeff, we got a minute left. It's been an interesting show, I have to tell you. It's been an interesting split, I think a very effective split between economics and politics. You got the final word, my friend.
Well, Marshall, any thoughts or ideas about the gold market, the physical gold market, for the remainder of 2013, and we'll leave it with that.
Positive or negative? You got 30 seconds, Mr. B.
Positive. Gold has been up for 12 years in a row. We even though it's gone down over the last month or two, we think it'll be another positive year for gold. And don't forget silver. Silver is a lot fewer companies, but silver's also got industrial uses and probably percentage-wise could very well be more attractive as an investment currently than gold, although we think both will do well over the balance of the year.
Ladies and gentlemen, on this show, we called what we felt was the bottom of the gold market about 2 weeks ago when gold on an intraday low traded at $1,321. We're standing by that. Hope you enjoyed the show.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit and carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
Are you an inventor, or do you know an inventor who would like to attempt to have an invention or idea patented and submitted to industry? For free information on how to proceed, phone toll-free 1-800-977-6119. InventHelp, America's leading invention company, has inventors' information you can have free. Get an informative brochure and other material of interest to new inventors from the company whose patent referrals have helped secure more than 7,000 patents. Learn how to get your free information by dialing 1-800-977-6119. That's 1-800-977-6119. Even if you only have an idea for improving an existing product and don't know where to go with it, you'll want this free inventor's information. It shows how InventHelp may assist you in trying to patent your invention and submit it to industry. It's a free call. That's 1-800-977-6119. 1-800-977-6119.